They also thought, we won the election. Why should we have to make all the concessions? We won. Why do the winners make all the concessions? Why shouldn't the slaveholding South, which has had its way in national governments for so many years, why shouldn't they make some concessions now that the Democratic verdict has been that we are in control? The most promising compromise in the eyes of many at the time came in the form of what was called the Crittenden Compromise. It was named after an old senator from Kentucky, John J. Crittenden, a man who in some ways had inherited the mantle of Henry Clay, the great pacificator of earlier in American history, someone who was always looking to find a way to reconcile differences between the sections. Many pointed out that it was right that Kentuckians would be doing that because there's Kentucky between the South and the North, a state that's on the great borderland, and here these statesmen from Kentucky are trying to find a way to hold it all together. Crittenden certainly was acting that way in December of 1860 and on into the spring of 1861. What he came up with was a series of constitutional amendments, the most important of which would allow slavery south of the old 3630 line of the Missouri Compromise, reinstate that line, extend it all the way to California, and allow slavery in existing territories below that line and in any territories that the United States might later acquire below that 3630 line. Republican votes killed the Crittenden legislation twice in the Senate. Republicans were not going to go along with that, once in December and again in January. The key thing here is that there's really no ground on which to fashion a compromise because each side has a minimum demand that the other will not accept. The South wants an absolute guarantee of their slave property in the territories. The Republicans want an absolute ban on slavery in the territories. Neither side is willing to compromise and on that issue, and therefore there really isn't any kind of ground on which to explore a compromise that both sides would expect to last and to be effective. So you have this discussion and debate and suggestions put forward, but really I think none of them had a realistic chance of success because of the minimum demands of each side. Well, let's see what Lincoln has been doing in this process. Move to Abraham Lincoln. He made no public statements following his election. He stayed in Springfield. Just as during the campaign he hadn't made statements, after the election he did not make statements. He and Seward at first believed, as we said earlier, that Unionist sentiment in the Lower South would be greater than it was and that Unionists would step forward to help end the crisis. The North could simply wait out the South, they thought. If they could just drag the process out for long enough, these Unionists who were timid perhaps, unwilling to go against some of their neighbors who were secessionists, give them enough time and they will step forward. Once they know that it's a true crisis for the Union, they'll do the right thing, is what Lincoln and Seward and others believed. They also believed, Lincoln certainly did, that the Upper South and the border states, those eight slave states still in the Union, all of which had voted, the key ones in the Upper South anyway, had voted for Bell and the Constitutional Union Party, those key states would never join the Deep South states in secession. They believed that Unionist sentiment clearly in those states was too strong. Lincoln had a lot of friends from those states, old Whig friends, others he believed would clearly be the leaders of the Upper South and the border states. We've only lost seven slave states. The eight that are still in the Union believe many Republicans will not join the Confederacy. And if we just can wait a while, the whole thing might be worked out to our advantage. In fact, before the firing on Fort Sumter, all the states of the Upper South and the border had either voted against secession in state conventions or had refused even to consider the question of secession in a state convention. So there's some reason for Lincoln to believe what he believed. It seems that there's not great support for secession in the states that had not left. The dark cloud in this for Lincoln and the Republicans and the North, however, is that these same states had made it absolutely clear that they would not countenance an overt application of force on the part of the federal government to make the seven states that had left the Union come back. We're not ready to secede, they said in effect, but don't try to force them to come back. They had the right to go. You're going to have to leave them alone.